Okay, Matthew, here we are. It's 2023 and we're back.
We haven't done this in a while.
It's been like a month and a half probably, right? Because I think November.
Probably longer. Because once we start making spirits bright, you go in a
That's
hole.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. I know. It's true. But I think we must have done one in November, maybe.
Yeah, I'm sure we did.
How was your break?
The break was really good. We had our family from Oklahoma come up.
Yeah.
But then after Christmas, we went to Alberta.
Oh, yeah.
And it's quiet. It's on the farm. Tanya's mom now lives alone on the farm.
Yes, but, right.
I'll tell you something cool that happened.
I
don't think I've told you this. One day I was driving. They have a dirt road because they live in the middle of nowhere, Alberta.
Yeah.
Rolling hills. It's really beautiful.
Yeah.
And as I was driving down the dirt road, I was by myself. I was going into this little town called Bentley. They live near this town called Bentley.
Mm-hmm.
And these two big beasts like ran across the road and I didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
They weren't horses or cows. And I was like, what is that? And I looked, it was two moose.
No way.
Ran right in front of my car.
Wow.
So I stopped and I rolled down the window and I was looking at these moose. And I have this on video so I can testify.
Yes.
And then I was like looking at these moose. And then I looked the other side and out in a field, there were five other moose.
No way.
Mooses.
I think meese.
Meese.
Just kidding. Yeah. Oh, really? Wow. So it was like a herd of moose.
Yeah. And, and I'm told like moose don't go in herds.
I was going to say, I didn't know that was a thing. Yeah.
Maybe it's not. Maybe they just became friends. But maybe I have it on community. Film.
Yeah.
I can testify. Huh. It's so cool. Like middle of Alberta, snow everywhere, and these seven moose.
Amazing.
It's awesome.
Moose are, I've seen some up reasonably up close, and they're like, they're just so massive. They're quite massive. Yeah. Like bigger than horses? I think so, eh?
I guess so.
I think so, yeah.
Their legs are skinny.
And they're So you know that I tree planted for 5 years,
yes.
Right? Hold for applause.
That's the earth thanks you.
Yeah, absolutely. I planted hundreds of thousands of trees. Just so we're clear, I always said that to Marilyn, if she was like, you're wasting paper. I'm like, Marilyn, I've planted literally over a million trees. There was one place that we were in Houston, BC, near Houston. Michelle Renault would be she'd be happy to hear this because that's where she's from.
That's great.
And, there was a while where I, probably 4 or 5 days, nights where, and we're like in the middle of nowhere tenting. And I have this little tent. And every night for about 4 days, I would hear a moose. I was sure it was a moose that would, it would come right around my tent. And I think it just loved the grass there. So I would wake up at like 2 a.m. and literally like a foot or two away from me, I could hear the grass being ripped out of the ground and then like chewing and like it would stomp and stuff. But it was like, it was obviously didn't do anything, but I kept thinking like they look so awkward and there's all these strings everywhere, rope everywhere. Cause you got your tarp down and I'm just waiting for this moose to like trip or something.
That would be so scary.
On Corey. I know. Seriously. I was like, on one hand, it was kind of cool. And then I'm like, oh man, like they seem so awkward. And skinny legs. And
yeah, I had a similar experience in Africa. We were tenting at this safari and I heard chewing on the ground.
Ooh.
And I unzipped the flap.
Yeah.
And it was a hippo.
No, I hear that hippos are very dangerous.
They are.
Like maybe the most dangerous animal or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's really crazy. So what'd you do? Just like kind of
his
slowly.
Belly went up against the nylon of the tent because there was something on the tent, like it was like pushing in a little bit.
Yikes!
And I was just like, oh my goodness,
that's
thing trips,
scary. Yeah.
Do hippos or if it hears, trip?
What's that? Hippos? Well, they're pretty low to the ground. I don't know. You know, the weight ground ratio is pretty good for hippos, but anyways, okay. Well, Matthew, we were in Mexico. Thanks for asking. We had a great trip. Yeah, no, it was awesome.
We all noticed on Sunday.
Did you?
You were looking tanned as you led us in worship.
Yeah. Thanks. I know. I was, definitely got a lot of sun. It was like beautiful. It was like 29, literally, we were there for 10 days, literally every day, 29 and hot and sunny.
That's awesome.
And we just read books and laid in front of the pool and
Us all about the food.
I told Matthew the food was the only kind of mediocre part of the trip was the food at the resort. We were at an all-inclusive, which is our first time doing an all-inclusive. And it was, the food was like, I don't know. So we actually did a number of excursions where we would go to Playa del Carmen, or we went to there's a little island near there that we went to. And so we a few times went out, and actually a restaurant along the ocean that we went to a couple times.
Cool.
It was so good. So that was good food. But at the resort itself, it was like, not great. But we had an awesome time. I read 3 books. Sherry read 4 books. and just lots.
She wins.
She wins. She always does. She reads so fast, and she So it was great. We had an awesome time away. So yeah.
You were in the ritzy part of Mexico. I was texting Corey.
I know. I wasn't sure. I was like, "Is that true? Is that the ritzy part?"
Well, I've heard that like the Yucatan Peninsula where you were was like it's a little bit nicer than like West Coast. More than like Puerto Vallarta. Like if you could go to Cancun or Puerto Vallarta.
You would go
to Cancun.
Okay. Yeah. We were like an hour away from Cancun.
Like apparently the beaches are a little bit nicer where you were.
You know what? Yes, that I could see. This was beautiful. The one, this island, I can never pronounce Soyon Bother, but it was like a little island that it was actually apparently the beach that we went to was one of the top, it's always in the top 10 Caribbean beaches or something. So,
nice.
Yeah. So nice. Great.
So now that we've made everyone jealous.
Yes.
You've made us all jealous. Yeah,
I know. But I'm back. Yeah.
People are listening to this podcast driving in the rain.
I know. Oh, I know. Me too. This morning, I was like, oh, remember how awesome it was like 5 days ago. Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
I'm glad you had that
good
time.
To be back though. Yeah. Hey, so we are tackling Matthew, it's a big deal at North Langley. We're becoming egalitarian.
Yes.
And you had your first message yesterday.
Yes. Although a friend of ours, a mutual friend,
yep.
who I will not name,
yep.
but she said, we need to make sure that our language is that our church is moving to a theological stance called egalitarianism, but that we are not egalitarian and that person is not complementarian. That's like an identity thing.
Oh.
They have a complementarian position,
right.
but they are John.
True.
John and Sarah.
Yes.
And Charles.
Yes. Children of God.
We're all children of God. We hold different positions.
Yep. Totally. Yes. That's right. Okay. Got it. Good. Yeah. That's a good note. Yeah. Really. Yeah.
Well, I've been thinking about it. I was like, yeah, you're right. Like I am egalitarian or I am complementarian. It's kind of like an identity thing.
Yeah, and you actually mentioned on Sunday that you don't love the terms to be, which is, I totally agree. I know, because complementarian, in fact, it's funny because in your message, you did say, I know we're going to get to this.
Yes.
You did say that it's even as you're talking about the egalitarian position, how it's like, it's like, you know, men and women complement each other, you know?
Yes, I did. Yeah, that was intentional.
Like, so I know. And it feels like it's like, well, shouldn't that be complementarian then? You know, but it's like,
right.
Anyway,
right.
It's just kind of funny.
So hold that thought, more on that later, because I have more to say about that.
Oh, good. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
But I just want to maybe just, just say maybe the journey to get here. I wasn't planning on saying this, but just it's been a quite a journey. Like Corey, you were part of like a staff retreat this fall where we went through the material. We tried to look at both sides fairly equally. We had an elder retreat that looked very similar, like tried to look at both sides fairly equally.
Yeah.
And this sabbatical that I took this summer, like this was all that I was doing. I was just reading just this stuff. And so it really feels like this is like I didn't say this on Sunday, but it just feels like now that I'm actually saying this, I've been like immersed in this for months and it just feels like it's like Christmas morning. Like it's now time to talk about it.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good. Yeah, you're right. I know it has, but you've been talking about this for, well, probably a year, I think. Like, maybe longer, but I mean, as far as actually getting into it and
diving in.
Yeah. Diving in. So it's great. Yeah.
So can I do a quick recap of Sunday?
Yes, and sorry I'd love for my coughing, everyone. Yeah. Let's do it, Matthew. Recap.
Yeah, thanks for apologizing, because already I was getting annoyed.
Yeah, I know. It's like a seal's bark. It's so annoying. But yeah, I don't know. Okay, go ahead.
We're in this little room together. Are you sick?
We're probably both sick now. Yeah.
Oh, great.
No, I don't know. I know. I've had this for like months. It's just like a lingering, annoying, itchy cough.
Mm.
Yeah. I'll be fine. Don't worry about me, Matthew. I'm going to be okay.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay, so this last Sunday, so just a reminder that this podcast is supposed to pair with, like a good wine. Wine and cheese? No,
yeah,
pair with. Okay.
Yeah, cheese, yeah.
It's supposed to be the cheese to the wine,
or
the wine to the cheese on Sunday. So idea is it's probably good to listen to the sermon on Sunday first before the podcast, because in some ways what we're gonna talk about is like pivoting off of the sermon. But anyway, here's a tiny recap. If you are listening to this before you've listened to the sermon, week one, we were just trying to look at the book of Genesis and just be really, really focused just on Genesis. And this is going to be a bit of a theme. I hope to bring it up maybe a couple times on the podcast. But just one of the things that I feel like we do, both egalitarians and complementarians, is we jump to the New Testament really quickly, which I don't always think it's not always bad.
Right, yeah.
But I think because Genesis is used by the New Testament writers It's easy to go to all those passages that they in the New Testament that they reference Genesis and just yeah. try to kind of always going back and forth between the New Testament and Genesis. But I'm like, well, wait, hold on. Let's just look at Genesis. Let's just, it's not like we're trying to ignore the New Testament, but let's just put the New Testament on hold. And in this series, let's start with just looking at the text.
Yeah. Yeah.
And hopefully that's what we tried to do. So like I've already got some pushback this morning because we're recording this on Monday.
Yeah.
So in the last 24 hours or so, I've gotten some pushback.
Right.
And already I can tell people are rushing to the New Testament. Mm-hmm. Like they're already starting to quote the New Testament. And I'm like, ah, let's hold on. We will get there. And we will get there and deal with it a lot.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. We're going to get there. But if we can, just let's look at Genesis. And so in Genesis, the question we were asking is, are all leadership roles in the church open to both women and men? And we're saying yes. We're saying yes. And now, obviously, leadership roles in the church is not something that, like, you find in Genesis. In Genesis, it's a little bit more about men and women and roles in general.
Totally.
But I don't see a hierarchy in Genesis at all. In Genesis 1 to 2, we see male and female made in the image of God and given co-rulership over creation. Mm-hmm. And it's only after the fall where we see this dysfunction, this dysfunctional relationship where men take authority over women. So that's kind of the summary of Genesis. And we looked at a few pushbacks. So the complementarian position sees numerous ways in which men have leadership over women in the book of Genesis. And I tried to address a few of those. Mm. One of them was Adam is a leader because he was formed first. Mm-hmm. That's one argument. Another argument is Adam has authority over Eve because God comes to confront Adam after they sinned. And then Adam has authority over Eve because Adam names Eve. Mm-hmm. So if you're interested in any of those questions like that, I tried to address those in the sermon. So
Yeah, totally. That was great. I thought it was super helpful. I talked to you a little bit about this, but I thought that I really thought it was quite a, that I hadn't seen it this way before, but the idea that a couple points for me was that when you, like the whole co-rulership, like where they ruled together over creation, steward together, ruled together. But then it was only after the fall that suddenly it's like, and now man will rule over you. And I like the comment on that being descriptive, not prescriptive.
Yes.
It wasn't like God was saying, this is how I want it to be.
No.
He was saying, this is now how it's going to be as a consequence of this fall.
Yes.
And then the other part I really loved was the, I just love that image of the word for helper being
is there,
yeah, which is, again, we have friends, Evan and Ezer, who are part of our tech team and brothers, twins. And anyway, so I was laughing with them. I'm like, hey, you guys are getting a lot of airtime in this sermon. but I love that. I love that idea that it's like, right, because we do think of, I often think of helper, that word helper as, yeah, somehow subordinate or lower than, or somehow not quite as high in the hierarchy or whatever, you know?
Totally.
But then when you look, it's like, actually, what do you say? 17 out of the 20 times or something that it's used for God, like that word, which is like, oh, very cool.
Totally.
Yeah.
Really. It's a strong word.
Strong word.
Really strong. Yeah. So, okay, well, let's dive into a few things that I didn't have time to address. And hopefully these things are helpful. And a couple of them have come from some comments I've just received today. So,
okay.
So the first thing I wanted to talk about was I wanted to go back into the definitions for egalitarian and complementarian and why I don't think they're great words.
Yes. Yeah.
So I just want to say a little bit more about that. I didn't have a lot of time to do that on Sunday. Like I mentioned on Sunday, they're not, these two words, egalitarian and complementarian, are not found in the Bible. They're pretty new words in the history of the church, and neither word fully describes the position accurately. And so I just want to give some examples of that. So, and this is on both sides.
Okay.
So on the one side, for instance, egalitarianism is a word that at the root just means equal. Mm. So it's equality.
Right.
And I don't want to do straw man arguments. So I'm trying to give the best definition of these sides. So the best definition for complementarians, or the best people who are arguing that complementarian position, they truly believe that men and women are equal in dignity, equal made in the image of God, equal in salvation, equal in all of it.
Right.
So they have equal access to Jesus, you know, but that there are roles, the idea of roles, there's different roles we play. So,
totally.
Men are head of home, women, they have a role, a biological role that men don't have. They can give birth to children, right? So it's just, so this idea of these roles. So I think complementarians might feel like, hey, egalitarians are stealing the equality role. Like we also believe in equality. Now, egalitarians would argue, no, you don't. Like your definition of roles actually shows an inequality there.
Right.
Because men are always leading, right?
Yes.
So sure, there's pushback. But I guess I just wanted to say complementarians might feel like egalitarians are stealing the equality portion that they believe in. But on the flip side, egalitarians don't love the fact that complementarians seem to have stolen their word, right?
Right.
Because egalitarians believe that women and men are different, but serve together in a way that complement each other. So for instance, here at North Langley, what we're looking for is complementarity.
Right.
We think that North Langley is better when there's men and women on the elder board, when there's men and women on the staff team, when there are men and women on your worship teams. Like, we're just better, right?
Yeah, yeah.
How can we articulate all the ways in which male and female are different? Probably not. I think a lot of it is mysterious ways in which we're different, but that we believe that we're better when we're together. And not excluding one over the other. So I actually totally believe in complementarity.
Right.
You know? And I think we're missing something when we don't have women in the elder room or when we you know what I mean?
Totally.
So anyway, so I really liked a quote Tim Mackey, who's Bible teacher from the Bible Project. He said this. He said, quote, "Why I don't like egalitarian as a title is because equality in our cultural setting can be heard by people as erasing gender difference. But that's precisely the opposite of what this whole thing is about. The whole point is that in Genesis 1, it is male and female, one humanity consisting of two gendered others. That otherness in unity is the image of God. It's precisely the difference of gender when it is brought together in the unity of the Spirit of Jesus to reflect the love of God. It's in the gender difference that the beauty is shown." So here, you know, here's something to reflect on is like in a time where we're talking a lot about gender fluidity or gender non-binary and some, you know, obviously that's a deep conversation.
Yes. Yeah.
But that's not what I'm arguing for.
Right. Yeah.
I'm saying absolutely. There are men and there's women. Now, how we define men and like it's you know, men love steak and drive pickup trucks, and women like pink.
Like hockey,
that's not what we're doing here.
Right, right.
But we are saying that God made men and women, and that there is something about their unity together that reflects the image of God.
Right,
and it's actually beautiful, and so we want to see that in our leadership. We want to see this complementary relationship of gender in our. In all aspects of our church. And so we're not trying to erase gender in this series, right? That's not what I'm trying to do.
Right.
I'm trying to just highlight the fact that we have not had one of the two genders in the highest position of our leadership team.
Totally.
And we're hoping to see that, to see that complementary ministry take place.
Totally. Yeah. I like that a lot. Beauty and diversity. Like, and it's funny because I was thinking about how, and this is a different topic, but like when people say, I don't see color, you know, you hear that.
Right.
People say,
right.
And I'm always, I'm like, I think that's less good, you know, than it could be, than it should be. It's like, well, no, there's beauty. Like I love like different, I don't know a ton about different cultures. I feel like I'm very Canadian, but I'm like, there's so much beauty in seeing different ethnicities and cultural values and things, the way people express themselves. And I'm like, it would be kind of sad if we all just kind of become this sort of the same color. It's like that U2 song we've talked before about, we both love U2.
Yes.
But that, I believe in the kingdom come when all the colors will bleed into one.
Yes.
And I'm always like, oh, I feel like I get it, but
I've never known what he meant by that.
True. It depends on what he meant by that. But I'm always like, if he, at face value,
right?
I'm like, I don't love that. You know, I'm like, I think
if
I love the idea
skin colors.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, and maybe that's not at all what he meant. He might address, you're reading the Bono book right now, aren't you?
Yeah, yes. Surrender.
I finished it. I think he might, I'm trying to think if he addresses that or not in the book, but anyways, good one. Yeah. Surrender. Great book. But yeah, I love that. I like.
So a phrase I like, but I haven't used it yet in the series is complementarity without hierarchy.
Oh, okay.
That's my phrase, but no one else is using it.
Is complementarity a word? I guess it is.
I don't know.
Okay.
Complementarity without hierarchy.
Yeah,
men and women serving together in every every part of the church.
Totally. I know that you're we're talking in particular about the church right now, church leadership. We're not necessarily talking about the home. I know that that's that can be another discussion, but I know when people have asked me, for instance, just personally, when they'll say, so, you know, and not that it happens often, but someone say like, who's the head of your home? You know, or they'll be like, well, who do you think's the head of your home? You know?
Right.
And I've always been like, for me, honestly, I'm like, well,
Sherry.
Yeah, Sherry, absolutely. No question. But actually, I'm like, it depends on what you're talking about. Like,
sure.
You know, how about who's the head of our social calendar? Usually Sherry actually is the head of that part of our, you know,
right.
It's like, who's the head of this? Well, then actually that's more me. I definitely usually make the decision more on that part, but who's the head of that? Well, that's Sherry. You know, like, I'm like, for us at least, it's really, and I recognize I have friends actually where it's, and I know we're not talking about the home in this podcast, but I do have friends where it's very clear that one person is the dominant, just whatever, alpha, you know, kind of like the,
right.
And the other person is perfectly happy to say, you go ahead and make most of the decisions here, because I don't actually care that much about a lot of these things, or
right.
I'm very flexible. And but anyways, yeah.
Well, you bring up a very good question, even though it wasn't in the form of a question.
Yes.
But yes. The home, right? So we're talking about the church in this series primarily, mm-hmm. but most of my complementarian friends want us to talk about the home, because for a complementarian, the home and the church are very connected.
Mm, right.
Actually, for egalitarians, they see it separately, like that you can have a conversation about the church and you can have a conversation about the home. For instance, like, what would single people be thinking?
Sure.
Right. Yeah, they're like, okay, well.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, what home church? Like, This shows the crazy details of this conversation.
Yeah.
Because if I start to blend church and home a lot, I sound like I'm arguing from a complementarian place. Mm. If I separate church and home too much, it sounds like an egalitarian way of framing the issue. Mm. So anyway, what we're going to do in this series is we're going to try to stick with the church as much as possible. But I think in the last week or two, I will bring the home in. And the idea of the marriage relationship, for sure. Yeah. Because I think I have to, for complementarian's sake,
right.
to be like, how would you answer these questions? So,
and okay, speaking of this, Matthew, and maybe I'm not supposed to ask this question, but is it true? It does feel to me after yesterday, I feel like Matthew's audience here in particular is probably, and I know you're obviously preaching to all of us, but feels like it's more towards the complementarians, because in the end here, we are deciding to go the path of, you know, of egalitarian. So I feel like your role right now, to some degree at least, is to convince or to try to say, hey, mm-hmm. complementarians, we can all agree to disagree, but also let me explain to you why I think this is worth, you know, why this is worth us doing and changing what we have been actually in the history of our particular church. Would that be fair to say that's...
I think that's fair to say. I think it's fair to say, and I think I need to be careful not just to play to one group of people at the church.
Yes.
I just need to say what I think needs to be said.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really hard because I love my friends, right? Like there's some people who might want to leave the church and mm-hmm. I don't want them to leave the church.
Totally.
So I do want them to see that, hey, you may not agree with the egalitarian position, but I at least want you to see that it's biblical.
Yeah, yeah, and, totally. That's right.
You know, you may not like it. It's fine. And you may argue the scriptures a bit differently. But yeah, but I'm trying to not come on too strong either mm-hmm. towards the complementarians, because I feel like I can get in argument mode or lawyer mode and try to deliver zingers or something like that.
Yeah,
when in reality, I just need to maybe chill a bit. So
anyway, I didn't think you were. I thought you were pretty chill yesterday. It didn't feel like it was, you know, that you were argumentative or anything. At all. I think, as again, and maybe this might not be the best time to talk. I know you and I have talked a little bit about the idea, because as an egalitarian, I'm outing myself right now. You're right. Yeah. You know, part of me is like, my perspective, and I know a lot of your complementarian friends and mine wouldn't love this, but is like, oh my goodness, guys, like, come on. Like, it seems so obvious to me, right? Look around you. I feel like if it's true, it's from God, you know? And I know you and I have talked a lot about this, and I understand how that is not necessarily across the board, because you can run into trouble, who decides what's true and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But But I feel like when you look around, you say, well, there are fantastic women CEOs and in the workplace and in that have leadership skills and gifts. And it's like, you know, it's like I don't even need to look to the scriptures to see that this is very obvious that God has designed women and given them gifts and leadership. Right. So why are we taken apart? Like, oh my goodness, we're doing so much exegetical work on this. But I understand, I know that for you, I would say that many, especially someone from a complementarian perspective, traditional perspective, that would be a very, very big deal to say, no, I do need to ground this and root this in scripture.
Yes.
And so that, I know that that's the path that you're going.
Yeah. And you know, we've talked a lot about this, you know, it's the path that I take in my life too. Like, why? I'm not saying you don't.
I don't. What do you like? Seriously, Matthew.
Well, you live by your feelings. And I live by the truth. And truth doesn't care about your feelings.
Right, because you're not interpreting or anything.
Truth doesn't care about...
No, facts don't care about your feelings.
Facts don't care about your feelings.
Yeah, that's a wonderful but often misunderstood Ben Shapiro, ladies and gentlemen. It's just a fantastic human being.
No, I'm trying to say, we can have a whole discussion about what sola scriptura means, but sure. I do think the scriptures give us our authority. And so what I want to do is I want to argue from the scriptures.
Yeah.
And I will say that I have never heard, like when we talk about roles,
yeah,
roles between men and women, I went on a journey, and I told you this earlier, where I could never hear from complementarians like the why.
Right.
Like, why are men given this leadership role? And and can you prove that men are, you know, more wise or better at decision making or something like that? It's like you actually can't, right? Like that's totally. we all know that. And if some don't believe that yet, you know, I was just reading a Harvard Business Review thing about the IQ of women and the way they lead teams and stuff like that. And so yes. I've yet to find a why. Like why is it that and I ran across a very humble complementarian. His name's Gary Brashears, and he taught at Western Seminary, worked with Mark Driscoll, like, and Preston Sprinkle was talking to him, and these are all complementarians, by the way, everyone I'm mentioning here. And he was asking, he said, Gary's like, why are men given leadership? And Gary was honest. He said, I don't know. And I don't think any complementarian can tell you. It's just men have been chosen.
Right.
You know, and I found that a little deflating because I was like, well, that's, you know, and I don't want to be the child, you know, maybe the pushback complementarians would give to me. It's like, well, you sound like a child. You're saying why?
Right.
You know,
right,
and the parent says, I don't need to tell you why. It just is what it is. But it feels like in God's moral order, there's always a good why. Right.
Right. Yes.
Don't murder. Don't sleep with your neighbor's wife.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
And I know we're talking about roles, maybe not morality, but it always feels like God's way makes sense.
Yes.
It just makes sense.
Yeah.
And so it's been really interesting. That's not I'm not making that a big deal in my studies. Like I'm not bringing that up on a Sunday morning, but it is up until this moment right now, I've never been given a clear why as to why men, not women.
Right,
would be leaders. Yeah, it's just an interesting thing.
The argument you're saying the argument from, let's say, from your complementarian friends would be basically saying, I don't know why, but the Bible says it. I believe it, and that settles it. Right.
That's
the perspective. Which, as you know, I just don't feel comfortable with that kind of open and shut kind of way of looking at these things. Right. Because I do believe in using our reason and our experience and tradition and actually having to wrestle with that sort of the Wesleyan quadrilateral, which we've talked about. Right.
Which is point four today.
Ooh.
We'll get to it.
Okay.
Wesleyan quadrilateral.
I'm getting ahead of myself. Yeah,
but I would say, so just to end that thought, I would say the Bible says it. I don't think the Bible says it. So what I'm trying to say is I'm trying to stop us right there.
Right.
What does the Bible actually say?
All right. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So, okay. So one of the things I wanted to talk about was primogeniture.
Okay.
It's a great word.
It's one of my
primogeniture. So it's a little bit more on this argument where Adam is the first created, right? And so he's the firstborn, as it were. And so he's the first created. And then God creates Eve. So the idea of primogeniture is the right of the firstborn son.
Oh, right. Yes.
So they get the wealth. They get a bit more of the inheritance, and they get the leadership role.
Right.
Of the family, right? They're the older sibling.
Yes.
Not that Adam and Eve are siblings, but the idea is just that, like, Adam is the firstborn. So he gets the leadership role.
Mm-hmm.
So Wayne Grudem, very famous complementarian, hanging out with Jay Pipes.
Jay Pipes.
John Pipes.
He's got a kid, doesn't he? It's Abraham Pipes. That's his
Abraham
son.
Pipes.
I just saw him. I follow him on Instagram. Interesting fella. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, sorry.
So Wayne Grudem, complementarian, he argues that, quote, to be born first was to have a leadership role, and that the first readers of Genesis would have understood Adam's leadership because of the system of primogeniture in the ancient world.
Hmm.
So, hey, we're living in the 21st century. We don't understand the argument here. I'm giving the argument is that we don't understand the world that Genesis was written in. In Genesis, everybody would have read the story and they'd been like, oh, Adam's the leader because he was born first.
Right.
That's
right.
The idea.
Yeah.
We have a cultural lens that doesn't see that. But if actually you went back into ancient history, you would see that.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm here to say they're half right about that.
Okay.
I think they're half right.
Gotcha.
Because the question of primogeniture and how familiar the ancient world was with the practice is really a fascinating question. But the interesting thing about the book of Genesis is that the book of Genesis itself attacks the idea of primogeniture all the way through the book.
Hmm.
Let me paint this for
you. Yeah, yeah, interesting.
Ian Proven at Regent College, I took his Genesis class, and this is where I first heard this. This is unreal. And by the way, I'm about to tell you something so cool that when you see it, you can't unsee it.
Okay.
It's very fun.
Yep.
So, Abel is favored over Cain. Abel, the younger brother,
is
favored over
Abel. Yeah.
Isaac is favored over Ishmael, right? He's the younger brother.
Yes.
Jacob is favored over Esau.
Yeah.
Joseph is favored over his older brothers.
Hmm.
And I didn't even include this one. I think it's Ephraim and Manasseh, that Joseph's sons.
Okay.
I can't remember which one is which, but the younger is favored over the older.
Yeah.
That goes all the way through the 50 chapters of Genesis.
Hmm.
At all of Genesis, it would appear that God is not a fan of primogeniture.
Right.
He's always picking the youngest son.
Yeah. You think about David as well, right?
Yeah.
David was, I don't know if he was he the youngest?
Yeah.
He's
out in the field.
Yeah, out in the field. That's right.
And think of the prodigal son.
Totally.
Right. The older brother's out in the field. And now I love the prodigal son because God actually picks both.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
Equally. But I think Jesus is riffing on this idea.
Mm.
It's like the younger son gets all this grace and gets intimacy with the father, even though he's a total loser.
Yes.
Right.
Totally. Yeah.
And yet God, I guess what I'm trying to say is I agree with the complementarians who say probably in the ancient world, they would have seen the idea of the firstborn.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. But the problem with it is that throughout all of Genesis, it totally contradicts that.
Mm.
And I think complementarians would do well to notice that and to be like, okay. And I'd add this. I'd say another thing is that it's just not explicit in the text. God does not explicitly give Adam leadership.
Right.
It's nowhere in the text. Mm-hmm. I'm open to subtle ways in which God teaches us in the text. Right. I'm open to little subtle thing, So even though Adam's leadership is not explicitly named, I would be open to a more subtle nod to his leadership. Mm. But I don't think this is the right one, Adam being born first here, because Genesis is overturning primogeniture everywhere we look. So I really don't think this argument holds water.
Huh. It's fascinating. Yeah. I have never seen that before, but I love that.
Interesting, eh?
Cool, yeah.
Honestly, I felt like I was new to the Bible in the Genesis class when I started seeing that. I was like, you got to be kidding.
Yeah.
The younger son is always favored.
It's so interesting. And that's maybe it's one of the things that's funny about, again, we talk a lot about how do we read scripture in a healthy way and stuff. And the Bible it's so fascinating that way because it doesn't come out and say what you just said, right? It takes some work to be like, oh, wait a second. There's like a common, there's a theme here. There's a trend here,
Yeah.
But it's not going to come out and tell you. It's just, these are just people are recording things and they're writing. Yeah. It's like, oh, it turns out that God, like over and over and over again.
Yes.
Super fascinating. I love
Very
that.
Very fascinating. I know.
Cool.
Okay. And so here's a big thing for me. We we should all, complementarians, egalitarians together, we should have a problem when we're making assumptions about the text.
Okay.
So I believe that in order for complementarians to see man's leadership over women in the book of Genesis, they have to make assumptions. They just have to, because it's not there in the text.
Right.
So we've looked at some of these assumptions, right? I already mentioned them. Adam names Eve, so he must be the leader, or Adam is formed first, so he must be the leader. But these really are assumptions about what we're reading in this, in the text.
Hmm.
Nowhere in Genesis do we see God giving an explicit command for Adam to lead Eve. Now, making assumptions about the text can be dangerous. And so I want to give you an example. And I want to flip this whole thing upside down and argue. And just so you know, this is supposed to be funny. And okay. I'm just arguing for argument's sake.
I'll try to laugh where it's appropriate.
Yeah, try to laugh, yeah, okay, please.
Totally. We'll do.
So I want to argue for women having authority over men from Genesis.
Okay.
I'm going to make some assumptions about the text
mm-hmm.
so that you can hear me say that women should lead men.
Okay.
And just for the record, I don't believe what I'm about to say. Okay, but here we go. And this comes from an author named Andrew Bartlett.
Okay.
So I'm going to quote him right now.
Okay.
Here we go. Let's suppose someone were wanting to establish that women are ordained by God to be leaders of men. They could easily use the same kinds of arguments from implication that complementarians use, proceeding as follows. Here we go. In Genesis 2, the woman is described as man's Ezer. God is Israel's Ezer. The usual implication is that the Ezer is more powerful than the needy one who receives the help. We see in the narrative that the woman is made for the man because of his inadequacy and need. That is, he's alone and he needs help. Genesis 2 is adding further detail to the order of creation presented in Genesis 1, in which mankind is created last. It presents the woman as formed last of all, the pinnacle of God's beautiful creation. Therefore, it's implied that the woman was originally intended to be the strong leader of man. This understanding also sheds light on Genesis 3:16. In the fall, woman misuses her leadership. Therefore, it's taken away from her and given to the man instead.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah, totally.
So you can play that game. Like egalitarians yes. could play a game where they're arguing for women's leadership over men
hmm.
by saying, Ezer, that's God.
Yeah.
Or saying, Eve is the last to be created. She's the pinnacle.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's really wild. Totally, yeah. So part of what's challenging with all this, again, many of the topics we talk about is that scripture, because it's not like with a topic like this, I think, well, you made that quote from that book that you're referring to, where basically all four authors are saying, look, no matter what you choose here, no one's outside of the borders of orthodoxy,
right?
Whether they're complementarian or egalitarian, right?
Yeah.
In other words, it's not a salvation issue. It's not a massive, massive rock kind of deal.
Sure.
So then my friend Matt, our friend Matt, I remember him being, he on Sunday, he's kind of like, so then if this is the case, then why on earth, like if it's not a big deal on either side, then why on earth would we have not done this way sooner? Do you know what I mean? Like if it's,
right.
if this is like, right. and I remember you saying Daryl Johnson, one of your heroes, right? One of the guys
yes.
who teaches or used to teach at Regent and
yeah.
How he had said, he was arguing, saying you can't make an airtight argument on either side scripturally, because there'll always be back and forth and there'll be. So I remember when you told me that, this is a few years ago now, I remember being like, well, then what on earth are we doing? Then if it's so close on either side, you know, not that I'm saying it is, because I think you're arguing actually that it's very clear if we can have the eyes to see, but still the point is like, well, what are we waiting for then? Like, or why would we have waited so long if this is not a massive rock issue?
That's a good question. I mean, part of that is logistics.
Mm.
I think this is my 10th year at North Langley
mm-hmm.
and I didn't want to come in as like a young pastor, dive into this issue
right,
and try to lead a church through a big change like this. I think it takes time.
Yeah.
So I think timing, I think different churches are ready for it at different moments.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's a flaky answer, but.
No, it makes sense. I see it. Yeah, I get it. It's funny that joke about, you know, like how sort of a cliche about how churches can be very hard to change or to make, you know, new direction. And so the joke about moving the piano from one side of the stage to the other, You know, and how it's like we do it, like we'll just move it an inch every week, you know, and then like eventually by, you know, two years later, we're, you know, but I do get it. I think that there's actually a lot of, I do believe there's a lot of wisdom in that, even though I think I can sometimes feel reckless about it, be like, oh, whatever, let's just do it already. What are we waiting for?
Right.
But you're right. You're caring for, I think that's what, I think I appreciate that about you, that you care deeply, obviously, for every person in our church and whether or not you agree with them. And so I think it does make sense that we're being careful about it. And it's not just like, it's a 5-week series, right? It's not, it's not one Sunday. So,
no.
So I do get it. Yeah. I think the restless part of me is like, oh my gosh, like what are we waiting for? You know, but I get it. I get it.
Okay. So really quick, I had a really fun question. Somebody asked a fun question. They said, well, Matthew, you keep talking about going back to God's original design in the garden. But surely we don't go back to that state in all ways. For instance, they were naked. I mean, he said, I know this is a funny question, but it's like if Matthew, if the ideal is Eden, you keep talking about going back to Eden,
right?
You know, like this, like, so if Jesus heals us at the cross from all of our sin and shame and stuff, like, then is this like a nudist colony thing?
Right, exactly. Right.
And he said, pardon the funny question, but like, what is it about Eden that we take and don't take?
Yes.
So, anyway, I was talking to Tim McCarthy about this and he actually gave a great answer. He said, so I would say to this person who asked this question, yes, I think we go back in all ways to the garden.
Right.
But could it be that the nakedness clothing thing is all just a picture, a metaphor, right?
Mm.
So, nakedness is an image of vulnerability,
mm-hmm.
of trust between male and female. And when shame came into the story in the garden because of sin, they covered up because they felt shame.
Mm.
Well, hopefully at the cross, Jesus heals us of our shame, right?
Yeah.
So the idea is now we can have vulnerability and trust with one another in our relationships.
Mm.
So I think maybe thinking beyond the literal nakedness and clothing,
and
looking to probably what the author of Genesis is trying to get at is that there was this intimacy and this trust, this vulnerability, openness to the other.
Yeah.
But that was ruined by sin.
Mm-hmm.
And shame meant that the metaphor is we covered up.
Yeah.
And we isolated, we pulled back from each other.
Yeah.
We were afraid to be around each other, self-protective. Yeah.
Yes.
And so anyway, yeah. So hopefully that's a helpful answer to the person who asked.
I like that. And it's true. It's funny. I've told you this before, but I love it when science and technology and like latest studies, I just feel like continue to point us to God, actually, if we have eyes to see. And you, like even what you're talking about here, vulnerability and trust. And like we know more, I'm reading a book right now, I've told you about, like The Myth of Normal. And he's just talking so much about how what a negative impact on our physical well-being, things like trauma, and of course, abuse and shame and all those things that we go through as children. This guy's not a Christian, I don't think, but he's just saying like we just see study after study that these things affect us like all through our lives. Like you have like 78-year-old people that are still struggling because they were bullied as children really heavily by, you know, a parent or someone significant in their life. And it is amazing how even so what you're saying, just to kind of go on that, it's like, yeah, like that actually it's like who would not want to go back to that place where we are all in a, you know, where it's not either our powerful and the weak, you know, but it's actually where it's, no, you are safe to be vulnerable. You're safe to be loved as you are. And
Yes.
I like that.
Okay. And then final thing here is just, I want to end with the idea of unity as a church. Mm. I really do hope we can stay united as a church family. The 17th century Lutheran theologian and educator Rupert Meldenius said this. He said, quote, in the essentials, unity, in the non-essentials, liberty, in all things, charity.
Hmm.
So he's saying there's some essential things that we as Christians hold on to, and we need to be unified around those, you know? So easy examples of that are the cross of Christ and the resurrection of Jesus and the incarnation and all of that.
Hmm.
In non-essentials, liberty, you know, things like when is Jesus coming back again or how old is the earth or, you know,
these
things, liberty. And I think this topic of women in church leadership is one of those non-essentials. Although we all are very passionate about it. And I think there is a right way to understand it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And in all things charity, meaning love, in all things love, that in all ways in which we live as a church, that there's love. So so that's that Bruce Waltke quote that I shared on Sunday. He's kind of riffing off of Rupert Meldenius, and he says, quote, "Conscious of the division and strife created in the contemporary church by the issues of women's roles in the church, home, and society, I offer this study with an emphatic assertion that these issues are non-essentials for the unity of the church." So the balance that I'm finding hard is that I believe that complementarians have a smart and informed reading of Scripture, but I don't think it's the right reading.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just trying to end with a little bit of vulnerability here. I think some people found that I was not honoring my representation of the complementarian side on Sunday.
Mm.
And I just want to end by saying I really want to be honoring of it, but I'm finding it hard because I want to honor it, but I don't agree with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the next 4 weeks, I will try my best to honor the complementarian position. And I'm just, maybe it's funny me just ending, asking for some grace in it. Cause it's hard to give a view that you don't agree with, its proper justice.
Yes. Yeah.
So I will try my best not to make straw man arguments for the complementarian side. So, anyway.
Yeah. I think anyone that's accusing you of making straw man arguments are misguided. That's not who I know you to be. You don't do that. I think you have done a deep dive into this, and there's no question about it. That's just my perspective. Maybe I'm being protective of Matthew, but I really don't think that's fair. But I think it's awesome. I know that you really do. I've talked to you enough to know that you really want to make sure that you are honoring both sides, and in particular the complementarian side, because you don't like, I know that, you have, like I said, a real love for our community. And I think that's super admirable. And so I think you're doing awesome. But I hear you totally about it. And I get that it's hard when it's a polarizing topic, right? It's a huge,
totally.
Which again, I know if you're, like you say, if you're new to Jesus, I'm sure people are like, what? Like, why is this so polarizing? But I know it is. When you've been in the church for a long time, it's like, it's a bigger deal for some people. So
I think it's
great. So I'm excited about the series. I've talked to a number of people that are really excited about it. Like I said, my own daughter, who of course is someone that I look at and I'm like, you've got leadership skills. I never want you to have a ceiling based on the fact that you were born, a girl, that you can't be a leadership at any level, And so I love that. So it's exciting. I think it's gonna be great.
Awesome. Well, hopefully you guys can join us this next week, and we're gonna be talking about women as leaders in the Bible. So this Sunday we're gonna go through a whole survey of women who led in the Bible.
Very cool. Okay, well, North Langley, we love you. Have an awesome week. We'll see you on Sunday.
See you soon.